You see them. You smell them. You eat them. Life would be pretty bland without them. Now, it's time to sit back, relax, and talk about them with Ann McCormick, the herb and cowgirl, who's at home with herbs on The Word today.
And welcome to our show. This is Ann McCormick, the Urban Cowgirl, here on KWRD 107.7 FM. Today is a lovely, bright day outside. So bright, the temperatures, I think, are playing footsies with the triple digits again. This episode, we're going to be using the theme of Jumpin' Jamaica, which is also a little hot because it's in the Caribbean, but it certainly would be a lovely place to be sitting on the beach right now. Just think of that, and the water just playing with your toes sitting on the beach there. But we're going to be talking about some herbs that grow in Jamaica, a couple of them you might not be aware of. One actually you can grow as a houseplant. Later on in the show, we're going to have a guest. We have executive chef Denise from Central Market, Denise Shivandi. She'll be joining us and talking with us about Caribbean foods and Jamaica jerk chicken. And then later on, we'll talk a little bit about other Jamaican foods. And if I can get to it, we'll cover a little bit about allspice, which is an herb, actually a hard spice, that comes from the Caribbean. But first, I have a couple of bits of business to attend to. I discovered this week that not only my website, but my email setup were not working as planned. So if you have sent me an email message through my website in the last few weeks, I'm sorry to tell you it didn't reach me. So try again. I did correct this problem, and your message will get through this time. I apologize. I really wasn't trying to ignore you. It just didn't show up there. The other problem right now on my website is I was trying to keep the archived files from this show on the website, and I'm having technical difficulties with that. We should have that cleared up by the next session, which would be July 5th by our next program. But stay tuned for that, and we'll have that all working for you so you can take a look and listen to the shows that you haven't heard. Okay, so this is Jumpin' Jamaica Day. Well, let's go into the garden, and let me introduce you first to an herb you may not have known about. In fact, if you saw its name, you would probably think somebody typed it wrong. The name of the herb is culantro. Now, if you saw that, it's culantro like cilantro, but with a U. And some people, when they see it, mistake and say, oh, no, it must be the same herb. It's not. It's actually definitely a different herb. It's sometimes called spiny coriander, which is the English name for cilantro. Cilantro is the Spanish. But culantro is a different plant. It grows pretty much like a dandelion. Think of a dandelion with little bits of spines. It doesn't sound like a very attractive herb. It's definitely not one you would put in your flower garden, your flower border, but more in your vegetable garden. It has a spicy flavor, somewhat reminiscent of cilantro. In fact, some of the recipes I was taking a look at, they did say if you can't find culantro, you can try using cilantro. But others who were more purists and probably more accurate said, no, it really is a different flavor. And only culantro will give you that flavor. Culantro is also known as recao, R-E-C-A-O. If you've ever seen that in a recipe from the Caribbean, that's what it is. This spiny dandelion-look leaves. They're about 4 to 5 inches long. And they really, the pictures I've seen, because I have not grown this one, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But the pictures I've seen indicate that it looks just like something that you might have picked early one morning in the lawn. Culantro grows naturally in shaded, moist areas, but it also needs zone 9 and 10, which is much warmer than we deal with here. Those in my within the sound of my voice at the moment, most of you are in zone 7 or zone 8. And so we get a colder weather and probably also hotter temperatures than and direct sun more than the culantro could probably handle. So this is this would be one, if you wanted to grow it in the garden, you'd have to grow it as more of a tender vegetable and give it a little extra care. Another thing I think is very interesting. So it's always fun to take a look at the Latin names. Now, I know some people think, oh, why do you have to need the Latin? Can't you just call it culantro or cilantro or oregano or thyme? Well, yes, but there are a number of plants, for instance, that are known as oregano. There's a Cuban oregano, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. There's a Mexican oregano. There's Chinese parsley. There's European parsley. Everybody has different names for these things. But the advantage of the Latin names is that it helps you to be sure that what you're talking about is the same as the person who you're talking with. So it's always helpful to take a look at those Latin names. And sometimes the Latin names give you a clue about the plant. In this case, the Latin name for culantro is Erignium foetidum, F-O-E-T-I-D-U-M. I'm spelling that because if you listen to my spelling, you'd recognize that as similar to the English word fetid or stinky. Some people felt that it had a stinky or bad odor. One source said that they thought it smelled something like a crushed bed bug. Not that I've ever smelled a crushed bed bug, but that's what, according to those who had the misfortune of dealing with bed bugs, they said it smelled like that. There are some herbs that don't smell as good. This apparently is one of them, but have a good flavor once it's in food. But this is one that is used in the Caribbean, Trinidad, Tobago, Guyana, Puerto Rico, Dominica. So if you've traveled in that area and enjoyed foods in your hotels there in the Caribbean, you've probably eaten culantro, even if you haven't seen it. You wouldn't find it in most markets, perhaps specialty markets, sometimes also in Asian markets, because in Southeast Asian cooking, Thai food and Vietnamese food do use the culantro as well. Okay, well, like I said, that's one you probably wouldn't be able to grow very easily here. But the next one I'm going to tell you about, you would definitely grow, and you might very well grow it indoors. This one is known as Cuban oregano. Now, it isn't exclusive to Cuban, and it is most definitely not oregano. Its genus name, start of its Latin name is Plectranthus, which you might have seen on some ornamental plants in some of the retail nurseries in your area. In fact, I saw a Plectranthus, a member of that family, earlier this week over at the Dallas Arboretum at the field trials. I was there. It's where they take plants, put them outside and just water them and measure to see how well they go. But anyway, Plectranthus is often used ornamentally, but Cuban oregano, which is Plectranthus amboinicus, I think that's how you'd pronounce it, is used like we would use oregano, but it has much larger leaves. The leaves are about the size of Creeping Charlie, if you've ever grown Creeping Charlie. It's green with a sort of white edging, very pretty actually. And the nice thing about it is it's a marvelous houseplant. It thrives nicely indoors. And it's fun because it trails down on the pot. It's very easy to root. You can pass it on to other people. And that's definitely one that you'll enjoy just simply growing for the pleasure of it. It does have that oregano flavor. I mean, you can smell it as you brush the plant or when you water it. It will release some of the scent. It can also be grown outdoors, but it's something of a succulent, so you need to remember to keep it well watered to get the healthy growth you want. But it'd be a good one in hanging baskets. Cuban oregano is used in various foods in the Caribbean and in the Gulf area. I have a recipe in front of me for Creole fried fish and green seasoning. Green seasoning is a type of sauce. Like we have picante sauce, which is based on tomatoes. Well, green seasoning uses Cuban oregano, culantro, which we mentioned earlier, chives, thyme, Italian parsley, and a few other green herbs, along with some garlic. You put that together and you use it as a sauce, like we would use picante sauce on our foods as a red sauce. So that's one way you could actually try using the Cuban oregano. Well, that's about all I was going to tell you about these two. I encourage you to take a look at those, Cuban oregano and culantro. Remember, that's like cilantro, but with a U. We're about ready to go to the break. And when we come back from the great break, we have a special treat for you. I'm pleased to say we'll have executive chef Denise Shivandi from Central Market here. And she'll be talking with me about Caribbean foods in general and Jamaica jerk chicken in particular. Stay tuned. We'll be happy to take your calls after the break as well. Welcome back to At Home with Herbs. This is Ann McCormick, the Urban Cowgirl. And in just a moment, we'll be bringing on our special guest for this segment. Just wanted to remind you of the 800 number you can call in to ask questions of myself or Chef Denise. We'll have her on in just a moment. The phone number is 1-800-949-5973. That's 1-800-949-5973. And just a reminder, even if you don't want to be on the air, you can call and leave your question with our friendly call screeners, who will be happy to pass the word on to us, and we can answer your call then on the air. So now I'd like to introduce to my listeners executive chef Denise Shivandi of Central Market. Denise, glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Ann. Glad to be here today.
Ah, it's good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Well, before we get started talking about Jamaican and Caribbean foods, and I'm interested to hear your Jamaica jerk recipe, tell us a little bit about what you do as an executive chef. I suppose you don't sit behind an executive desk and sign papers all day, or at least I hope not.
Certainly not nearly as glamorous of a desk. I do happen to have a desk, and I do use it quite frequently. And I do wind up doing a bit more executive duties and chefing duties on a regular basis, certainly.
Yes.
But here at Central Market, we do have a huge variety of products available in our chef case. And we have over 120 items that are available in our chef case, as well as a whole wall of foods that are pre-packed and ready to go to take home. Our salad bar, we have a full-service cafe as well. And it's my duty to kind of have oversight over all the food production that goes on within our store.
That's almost as much as having a full-time restaurant.
Oh, yes. I would say it's even a little bit more than having a full-time restaurant, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
We do have the full-time restaurant and many other things to boot.
That's right. Yes, because you do have the deli area. That's true.
Oh, yes. We have quite a bit.
Well, then, you're a busy woman. I'm glad you were able to take some time out to talk with us.
Well, certainly, Ann.
Okay. Well, as I said to the listeners, today we're talking about Jumpin' Jamaica and things associated with Jamaica and Jamaican foods. Tell us a little bit about the foods you're familiar with from the Caribbean in general and Jamaica in particular.
Well, I would say that, you know, definitely the thing that has made its way into the American culture is the Jamaican jerk chicken. That's really become popular, and it certainly has a wonderful spice blend in there that just really kind of shows off what we typically categorize as being New World spice crops.
Yes.
Because it has so many ingredients in it that are found only in the New World originally and were later imported back into Europe and actually became quite popular when they had a bit of a hankering for some seasoning in their food comparatively to the traditional European cooking. And it's definitely, I think, one of the best known and most popular items here, and I've seen it done many different ways, Ann. And I kind of worked with something to make it my own in terms of worked a lot with investigating. There's a lot of dry spice rubs out there, which certainly have their place and have some wonderful flavor to it. But, you know, I really like a wet marinade myself.
Okay.
And so I've actually come up with a wet marinade that I really enjoy, and it has just about everything you can think of to put in there.
Well, now, for some of our listeners, let's just make sure that not everybody has used a rub, perhaps, on some of the
Certainly.
Foods, or at least not known that that's what they were doing.
Right. So a rub would basically be something that's composed of any kind of dry spices and herbs that is going to be used to flavor your meat, typically used for roasting. I don't usually recommend a dry spice rub if it's something you're going to put on the grill, because the flames tend to lick up and really burn that.
Burn it off.
Yes,
yes.
Exactly. So,
yes.
You know, anytime you've even had, if you've had an herb-crusted prime rib, that
uh-huh.
really is a spice rub, because it's typically done with dry
items, yeah. Yeah, one of the simplest ones I use, you know, when I can't think of anything else to do, especially with beef, is I'll use a combination of black pepper, garlic powder, and onion powder, you know, something
oh, yeah.
very simple. And
but
just
so flavorful.
Yes, yes. It gives it something, but not overly strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So a dry rub is rubbed onto the raw meat.
Right.
And then it is roasted.
Correct.
In most cases, roasted. That's what you'd certainly recommend because then the seasoning doesn't burn.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
So now then a wet rub.
And see, I adore cooking on the grill. I love the fresh flame flavor.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I prefer the wet marinade. And
uh-huh.
with the wet marinade, basically all the ingredients that I put in there, I blend them together in the blender.
Uh-huh.
And we're talking about ginger and garlic. We've got fresh herbs in there like mint, thyme, cilantro. I use citrus juices in there, orange and lime juice for a nice acid to really mellow out that chicken and make it really nice and tender. And then, of course, what's so distinctive about a lot of the Caribbean food is a lot of the hard spices, allspice, nutmeg, cloves, things like that, cinnamon. These spices that a lot of the time we're more familiar with being in our sweets and our pastries are absolutely wonderful with any kind of meat. And originally the jerk seasoning was used mostly with goat. And as you can imagine, goat has a little bit of a stronger flavor.
I would guess so.
And exactly. And so with the strong spices that are going on in that jerk marinade, whether we're using a wet marinade or a spice rub, it really helps tame down that goat a little bit.
Yes. Well, it's interesting you say that about the hard spices showing up in recipes for meats or main dishes.
Mm.
In the Caribbean, in times past in the United States, you go back two centuries ago, you will see that more in the recipes here.
Yes.
And that surprises people when I tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that you've taken a look. There's a seen the book, The First American Cookbook by Amelia. For our listeners, it's a very interesting. It's the first one that was written in the United States by a U.S. woman here.
Right.
And it's the first time, I think, that you see recipes for gingerbread, one of the first times, I think, for recipes for cookies, and a couple of other things.
Yes.
But in particular, when we're talking about meats and rubs and stuff, is one of the things they would use is ground nutmeg in large quantities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for cooking a roast, take a whole nutmeg and grind the whole thing up.
Wow.
Which is quite a bit.
It is a lot. Well, and especially that fresh ground nutmeg. I'm such a big advocate of people grinding their own spices. There is such a big difference in that fresh grated nutmeg when you put that on something compared to something that you buy in a jar that's already been ground. It's lost so much of its aroma and so much of its flavor.
Yes.
It's just kind of wasted away on the air.
Yeah.
And I always recommend that in any of my spice blends that if you can purchase, like we have in our bulk bar, we have a huge assortment of things that come in seeds in particular that you can buy just a teaspoon at a time if you need to. Some of them can be pricey ingredients, and you may not need a whole 2 or 4 ounce bottle of some of these ingredients. So it's a wonderful way to buy just a few little ingredients, just a small amount of it, and have that fresh at home so you can grind it. I always use a coffee mill. I don't know if you're familiar with using that method.
Yes, something like a coffee mill. I have dedicated to a spice grinder. Now, just very, very quickly, Beck, you mentioned the bulk bar at Central Market. A brief description of that. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yes, well, actually, it's our bulk department, and that's where we have everything from snack mixes, like trail mixes, and nuts and things of the sort, but we also have a wide variety of spices, and that's really a nice way. Our spices and dry herbs, because we have some real nice exotic items available in there, and, you know, fenugreek, it's not something that everybody uses every day.
In Indian food,
would it take you to get through a 4 ounce jar of fenugreek at home, you know?
So
you can just buy a little bit of that, and it's a wonderful way to buy a little bit of seasoning for something and not having too much that's in your inventory, basically, in your spices.
Well, that's helpful to know, and I have taken advantage of that when I've wanted to experiment with a small amount of something, as you say. Because pound for pound, spices are the most expensive thing you buy in the store.
Oh, absolutely.
People don't think about it because they buy an ounce or two, but
if you
calculated how much it was a pound, it's something like, in some cases, $40 or $50 a pound.
Yes, and that can be very intimidating, actually, in our bulk section, because they look at it and they go, oh, my gosh, it's $20 a pound. But they don't realize all they need is a couple of tablespoons, and it's going to cost them about 25 cents.
Yes, okay. Well, that's helpful to know. We're just about to the break. So I guess we'll, after the break, we'll I'd like to hear a little bit more about the specifics of your recipe.
Sure.
But when we come back, we'll be also be, if you have some questions, we'll be happy to take some questions for Chef Denise on Jamaica jerk chicken or other things related to Caribbean food or any kind of herbs and spices at 800-949-5973. And remember, you can call and just leave a message with our friendly call screeners who'll be happy to pass the word on. See you after the break. Welcome back to At Home with Herbs. This is Anne McCormick, the Herb and Cowgirl, and I'm looking forward to talking with you about all things herbal. Today, we're talking about Jamaican and Jumpin' Jamaica. We have with us Chef Denise Shavandi from Central Market, who'll be with us in just a moment. But I wanted to let you know about something I discovered when I was preparing for this show. I decided to look up the word jerk and why is it called Jamaican jerk? Because it's not that the person who created it was a real jerk. And so I kept thinking, what does it have to do with anything related to jerk? Well, this is one of those where you have to look back in history to discover it's apparently a word that was originally an Peruvian Inca word for dried meat, sharky. Sharky, sharky, jerk. Jerk, and the same antecedent as jerky. Now, everybody here knows what jerky is, which is dried, spiced meat. Well, the jerk in the Caribbean is spiced meat that has simply been cooked over a smoked pit. The other thing I found that was quite interesting was that the original natives of the Caribbean, when they showed the Europeans how to do Jamaican jerk chicken, they would cook this over logs from allspice trees so that the flavor of the allspice would further flavor the meat. So I thought, my goodness, well, now I understand why it's called jerk chicken, which is sort of a Caribbean version, well, a sweeter, perhaps, Caribbean version of our Texas jerky. So let's bring Chef Denise back on. Denise, before the break, we were talking about the jerk recipe, and I'm going to give you full rein so you can talk a bit about your recipe, which I'm interested to hear.
Okay. Anne, would you like me to actually take you through all the steps of it?
We've
got about 16 ingredients in that.
That's why I think we probably don't need to go through all of them. When we talked earlier, we will have this recipe on my newsletter, which will be going out around the 1st of July. So those of you interested in picking up the recipe, go to my website, www.ann-mccormick.com. And on the left-hand side of the homepage, you can sign up for my newsletter and you'll get a getting a copy of Chef Denise's recipe. But why don't you just talk to us about, Denise, about the process of making it? Mention the ingredients as you will, but you probably don't need to list all of them. If it's 15 or 16, that's quite a few.
Exactly. It does have a lot. We want to get all those spices involved in there. We want the fresh herbs. We've got to have the garlic and the ginger and onion to really give it some depth of flavor.
Punch.
And one of the most important things is definitely going to be some hot pepper in there as well.
Yes, I discovered that when I was looking into that. They used to use Scotch bonnet peppers.
Scotch bonnet peppers.
Which are seriously hot.
They are seriously hot. And if you like it even hotter, you could try some habaneros. Now, in my recipe, I do actually use jalapenos.
Okay.
I find the Scotch bonnet and the habanero to be a little too hot for me, and I still like some of that pepper flavor in there. So I find if I use something really hot, I just don't have room to put a whole lot of it in.
Yeah.
So with the jalapenos, we took a little bit of the heat out. We still got some pepper flavor from it, and you can kind of play with that and make it as hot as you think you can handle.
Yeah, sometimes if something is too hot, I mean, that's all you can taste.
Right, yeah, right. And that all just depends on, people really do, I think you kind of build an immunity to it,
yes.
Get accustomed to it,
yes.
Can handle a little more heat if you've really had more exposure to it. So I'm not too strong on the heat. So I like a little spice in there, so I just put two jalapenos in there. But for the liquids, like I said, we do use some citrus juices, orange and lime.
Okay.
It's got lots of hot pepper in there.
Mm-hmm.
A little sugar to tame it down, give it some sweetness, and that sugar in the jerk really caramelizes and really builds a nice richness, whether you're making the chicken, whether you're doing it on ribs, a roast. You can really do this with just about anything.
Now, the caramelization, when you say caramelizing, that that's really when the sugar melts and it actually changes consistency, right?
Correct. Actually, yes. Yeah, so when the sugar caramelizes, the temperature rises. You eliminate the liquid out of that sugar.
Uh-huh.
It's melted down, and when it starts to turn color is when it actually begins to caramelize. You're actually burning the sugar to caramelize it.
I know a couple generations ago, burnt sugar cake was you know popular, but it was actually really just caramel cake.
Well, we would call caramel. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay, back to your recipe.
Yeah, no problem. A little bit of fresh herbs in there. The cilantro I find really important.
Uh-huh.
And I use the leaves and the stems. The stems have a lot of wonderful flavor mm-hmm. in them. And for something like this, it's certainly not a problem. They're not unattractive looking, because the really easy part about this, assembling all 16 ingredients is definitely the hardest part. But after that, for this recipe, all you do is put it in the blender.
Uh-huh.
And so we're blending up all those spices and herbs with the liquid and making that nice wet liquid marinade.
Okay.
And then you can just marinate your chicken in there.
Mm-hmm.
I've used it on pork ribs. I find it's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it on beef ribs, even on a brisket.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was listening to your description of making the sauce, and I was realizing it's a sort of a spicy but pesto is a more of a like a green sauce. It's a different group, but it's from the Mediterranean.
Right.
But these type of moist sauces that we can use either as mm-hmm. a condiment on top, or
right.
in this case, as a flavoring on the meat. And probably most cooking traditions have something like that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that kind of uses a base for a lot of other things. And in fact, when you were talking about the culantro earlier,
uh-huh. yes.
a lot of the Caribbean island communities, they actually use that culantro
uh-huh.
made into almost a pesto type of texture with garlic and hot peppers. And they use that as a base that seasons a lot of dishes also.
Yes, I think that's sometimes called green sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really inventive, but nevertheless, it's green and it's
right,
a sauce.
Exactly, I know.
Yes. Okay, so you get all these ingredients
right.
together.
Put them in a blender.
Okay.
You're going to marinate your meat. I love the dark meat of chicken. And
uh-huh.
if you're, you know, of course, if you want to watch calories or you just prefer white meat, absolutely use the breast meat or use the whole chicken quartered up.
Uh-huh.
And I marinate overnight. I really find that overnight
uh-huh.
time just really gives it a chance to absorb the flavor.
Okay, so a couple hours really wouldn't quite do the job.
You could do it, certainly, and especially with the chicken compared to some of the darker meats.
Uh-huh.
But I just recommend doing it overnight
okay.
if you can plan ahead. It's just a shame to lose any of that flavor. You just want to get it all in the chicken.
Yeah, I can understand. In fact, there was a period of life when I was taking graduate school classes in the evening, and so I had a very strict schedule. And one of the things I would do with something like this is that I would actually start the marinade in the morning before I went to work.
Mm-hmm.
And now with 15 ingredients, it would take a while to pull that together.
But
then it can marinate in all day. And when we talk about marinating, we're talking about in the refrigerator
yes.
overnight. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And I do like to take it out about an hour before I'm going to cook it.
Mm-hmm.
The internal temperature gets to rise just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to cook it fast enough that it's going to be okay. But by letting that internal temperature rise, you're actually going to have a better, more thorough cooking than you would if you don't allow it to
mm-hmm.
sit out for a little while.
Well, you know, I've found that I've been making that mistake a lot
mm-hmm.
recently, Denise. Because of economy's sake, you know, if you can buy a family pack, and I'm just cooking for myself and my husband,
mm-hmm.
if I buy like enough meat for three or four meals, I will freeze sections of that. But if I simply just defrost them and they're not fully brought up to temperature before I start cooking them, it takes longer to cook.
Yeah.
And it's really a problem.
It is.
Yeah.
And then especially with the chicken, we don't always get all the way inside nice and cooked.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's a good tip for just about anything, not just jerk chicken.
Absolutely.
But anything. Let the internal temperature rise, perhaps as much as an hour before you cook?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, and then you would take it then out of the sauce, and then what?
Now, I usually like to grill it. It's got that nice wet marinade in there. It's absorbed a lot of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I will put that on the grill. Give it
mm-hmm.
some nice markings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I find also that the meat, especially if we're doing a larger cut of meat or something that's more tough, if
mm-hmm.
we're doing some lamb or a roast, something of the sort that might be a little tough, a long, slow cooking process in the oven after we've just kind of given it some flavor on the grill is a great way to get it nice and tender.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's a great way, give it some flavor on that grill, cook the outside, mm-hmm. kind of sear it off a little bit. Some of that sugar is going to get caramelized and get some nice flame-kissed flavor. Mm-hmm. Then I put it in a roasting pan in the oven at pretty low temperature, about 250 to 300 degrees.
Really, that low?
Yes. And let it slow cook in the oven.
For about how long?
Depends on whether you're cooking chicken or if you're doing something like a red meat or lamb.
Uh-huh. Okay.
On the chicken, about 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's an interesting idea, because also then when you're at the cooking it in the oven at the lower temperature, you can, the cook, which would be me or some of my listeners, you could just go ahead and take care of other things related to the
exactly.
meal and just let it sit. That sounds great.
You can add a little bit of that marinade on top of it, too, if you're going to cook it some more. And it'll have a little bit of moisture, and it'll steam it, and it'll be deliciously tender and juicy.
Well, Janice, I really appreciate you coming. We're about ready to go to the commercial break. I want to thank Executive Chef Denise Chivande for being on our show. And Central Market has really done us a favor to have you come on. We'll be going to the break, and we'll, after the break, talking about some other Jamaican things, and take your calls at that time. 800-949-5973. Welcome back. This is Ann McCormick, the Herb and Cowgirl, and we just had a great time talking with Executive Chef Denise Chivande at Central Market. I really appreciated hearing what she had to say about Jamaica chicken and Jamaica jerk chicken. And just as a reminder, we will be having her recipe on my newsletter, which will be going out later this week. You can sign up for that newsletter on my website, www.ann-mccormick.com. And that's Ann without an E. So we have a couple of callers, and I want to see about answering their questions. If you have a question, call in at 800-949-5973. Let's go to our first caller. It's Sandra from Alvarado. Welcome to At Homes with Herbs. Sandra, what's your question?
Hi, Ann. I have got a lovely aloe plant that I would like to share with some friends. What's the best way to prepare some cuttings?
Well, aloe is one of those that actually really helps you quite a lot with giving plants to friends. You almost don't have to do anything to make that happen. You can't take a leaf off, however, and then root that. But what you can do is just let it grow, and you will notice that as your main plant matures, you'll see some tiny plants starting along the side. Have you seen that with your plant yet?
Yes.
Okay, those are called pups. Why they're called pups, I don't know, but they're called pups. Okay. And they're little tiny plants that have a sort of an umbilical cord to the mother plant. And all you have to do is just take a sharp knife and separate those out, and you can put those in a pot, or you can just simply separate them and give them to your friend. If she gets it in the soil within a few days, it'll be fine. These are succulents, and so they're used to, in God's world, out in nature, they're used to being accidentally dug up and pushed around, and they will survive out of the soil for a few days.
Okay.
So it's really a simple matter of just simply snipping those off, and you'll find as the year goes by, you'll see more and more of those.
Okay.
And in fact, they will try to become, of course, mature plants, and they will eventually crowd your main plant. So actually, once a year, I take my aloe out of the pot and pull out any of the excess pups, give them away, or if we get a really old center plant, get rid of that and use some newer, younger ones and repot it about once a year.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, yes, and aloe is a great one to have around the garden. Remember, aloe is one of those we definitely recommend just to sort of around the kitchen, because the juice from the aloe in the aloe leaves is great for dealing with skin burns or skin irritation. Well, we have another caller here. We have Randy from Fort Worth. Randy, welcome to At Home with Herbs. What's your question? How can I help?
Well, my sweet wife's trying to get some hummingbirds in the backyard, and even with a sugar water hanger and some red hibiscus, she's not having any success. Do you have any recommendations?
Well, the hibiscus certainly is a good plant. How long have you had the hummingbird feeder up?
Maybe a month.
Sometimes have to be patient for them to find it. I don't know. You're in Fort Worth covers a fair amount of territory. Some of the areas I know, I have friends in Fort Worth that live near native tree stands. If you live near something near that.
You have lots of oak trees.
You do. Okay. And is it a urban residential area? Or you?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know that oak trees will bring the hummingbirds as much, but I know like stands of native live oak seem to somehow have hummingbirds in the area. As far as what plants you can grow that will encouraging hummingbirds, just remember their long beak. They like long tubular flowers because their beak is designed to be able to reach in there, and they've got that nice little long tongue, and lick up the nectar at the base of these long, beautiful tubular flowers.
How about honeysuckle?
Honeysuckle is another one. Yes, honeysuckle is a good one. There's a red sort of, I think it's called trumpet vine. We're getting a little out of my herb expertise here at this point, but I think there's a couple of natives with the long trumpet-like flowers. Anything with that long tubular flowers. Another one that would certainly bring them is Damiana, although Damiana is not one to have around the house if you have small children. Damiana can be poisonous. And I don't know if you have children or grandchildren.
No, no kids here.
Okay, well, then that would be, yeah, because they have very beautiful plant, beautiful, and these trumpet-shaped flowers about, perhaps as long as a foot long, and they hang from the tree, from the bush. It's gorgeous. And that's the sort of thing also that would attract hummingbirds. But I would say definitely be patient. Perhaps the hummingbird feeder is not in a place where it's as noticeable. You might want to try a different location. Especially,
well, we've got it hanging within about 10 feet, 6 to 10 feet of a bird feeder that we have out there in a water, bird bath, that we have lots of birds and lots of squirrels.
Ah, well, the squirrels, yeah. The
squirrels are just great, and lots of birds and a couple of birdhouses, so it should be in an area that they would see, but we can, should I move it to where it's less shady or more shady?
Probably the red is what will attract them, so you don't want it probably really in deep shade. If you have it near the feeder and you have the other birds, that's probably good because, the presence of other birds indicates an area that's safe also for a bird.
Okay.
They take their cues from each other. We have a little tray that we have as a bird feeder and some water in our area. Yeah, you see one bird, and then the other birds will come in very quickly.
Oh, we've got an aviary most of the time back here, so.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, lots of birds.
Oh, yeah, and that's
great. Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed your show.
Oh, well, thanks very much. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks, Randy, for that call. We have one question from a listener who asked just to pass the word on to me. I have a question from Dixie in the Fort Worth area. Dixie says that she has a couple of 2-foot by 4-foot containers. Apparently, these are fairly deep, at least a foot or more. Yes. And she was asking, she grows vegetables apparently in it, and she was asking what would be a good idea for the best soil mixture for that. For both vegetables as well as herbs in a soil container, any good quality potting mix. I would not recommend, in my earlier years of experimenting, I would not recommend using garden dirt and simply putting it in the pots. I did that once and discovered why it doesn't work very well. I was living at the time in an area that had clay soil, as many of us have here, and that clay soil with very little organic matter in it just doesn't work very well. You need a good quality lightweight potting mix. I would recommend if you're putting it in there that you put in some sort of water retentive polymers. They come under different names. One of them is AgriSoak. They're designed, they're like little tiny sponges. It's usually a white. It's a naturally occurring mineral composite that when it gets wet, it becomes like jello, but thick jello, but it'll hold moisture and then it will release it into the soil as the soil dries. Now, Dixie was also asking about rate of fertilization and type of fertilizer. For vegetables and herbs, a good balanced fertilizer, balanced meaning that the three numbers that are on the bag would be similar similar numbers, like a 10-10, 12, 10-10, 2. And you need to water and fertilize it frequently, more frequently than you would in the ground. Because remember, as you're watering the plant more than you do water things in the ground, that's pushing the nutrients through the soil out the bottom. And so you have to replace that periodically. So that's what I would recommend on that. So, Dixie, I hope that helps you. We're nearing the end, and I think we might have one caller I'm not sure we'll be able to take. Looks like we're out of time. I'll take that call off the air, however. Be sure and look at my website, www.annmccormick. And next week, we'll be talking about picnics and day trips. Chef Denise will be back. Thanks to Dustin Briscoe, our engineer, and our two call screeners, Beverly and Janice.